Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Did you know that as more people listen to WNYC on the internet, our bandwidth expenses go up? Please do your part to support WNYC's online services. Click the ePledge button to make your gift now. And thanks.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. About to remember forgotten New York. If you thought Lake Wobegon was the little town that time forgot, well, Lake Wobegon has nothing on Gotham. We will explain. And we will also introduce a new thank you gift now and a new guest to WNYC, the author of a fun new book that many New Yorkers will want to own called Forgotten New York, The Ultimate Urban Explorer's Guide to All Five Boroughs. This book contains photos, descriptions, and directions to hundreds of great things to see in all five boroughs that come from bygone eras. Kevin Walsh is the author. He is an urban explorer extraordinaire and creator of the website ForgottenNewYork.com. He also leads Forgotten New York tours throughout the city and is a much sought-after expert on little-known facts about New York. We will invite your little-known facts about New York as well, and we are also offering the book, Forgotten New York, The Ultimate Explorer's Guide to All Five Boroughs, as a thank you gift to anyone who contributes. And I'm going to have to find out what the contribution level is for Forgotten New York. I'll tell you that in just a minute as soon as I get it. So thanks so much for considering that. And Kevin Walsh, oh, and I also want to announce, because I can, a big thank you to everyone who has donated to our fall fundraiser so far, including so many of you who helped us meet Paul Newman's challenge last hour. If you haven't contributed yet or haven't renewed your membership from last year, we hope you will consider doing your part to keep WNYC alive and well and able to bring you the programs that you listen to. Thank you, thank you, thank you for helping us make Paul Newman's $60,000 All or Nothing Challenge in 1 hour of WNYC programming. Thank you all so much. You're great. And if you haven't contributed yet to our fall fundraiser, or at least once during 2006, remember the number 1-888-376-WNYC, 1-888-376-9692, or pledge online at WNYC.org. Why not do it right now while you're thinking of it and before you forget? And Forgotten New York by Kevin Walsh is yours for a $100 contribution to WNYC. Thank you for considering it. Hi, Kevin. Welcome to WNYC.
Well, thanks, Brian. It's good to be here. I've been a fan of your show for several years, and I'm happy to be here today.
Great. And I'm new to your material, but becoming a fan of both your book and your website. And before we go touring around Forgotten New York with you and our callers to lots of specific sites, give us the overview. What is the concept of Forgotten New York? What kinds of New York things are you most interested in?
I'm interested in the kind of things that you're not supposed to notice in New York City as a tourist. As a tourist, you're sort of gravitated toward Broadway shows or plays or clubs or restaurants, and that's what you see in the guidebooks when you go into a bookstore and leaf through the books that are on the shelves there. You'll also see books on New York's architecture, the New York's famous buildings, like the Empire State Building or the Statue of Liberty and things like that. But with Forgotten New York, it's about the things that don't turn up in those books. Like, let's say you're walking down the sidewalk and you see a compass embedded in the sidewalk, or a clock, say, or there's a little alleyway with a rusted lamppost at the end of the at the end of the alleyway. It's these sort of things, and painted ads on buildings, those sort of things that we concentrate on with the website ForgottenNewYork.com and the brand new book.
So here's what I'd like to do that I hope will be fun. You organize this book into walking tours by neighborhood. So we'll take a few of those tours, and we'll also take calls and emails from our listeners. folks with your artifacts of forgotten New York, anything from your neighborhood or anything from anywhere in the city that you happen to know that you would share with your fellow WNYC listeners that you think might be fun for them to go check out at some point. Our phone number on the air, 212-433-WNYC. And remember, even though it's our fall fundraiser, we will never ask you for money on the air. Just call to do content, 212-433-9692, or email Brian Lehrer Show at WNYC.org. And again, this book is organized by borough and by neighborhood. So if you're looking for forgotten Tribeca or Harlem, the forgotten Upper West Side or Park Slope or forgotten Bayside or Astoria or Forest Hills or forgotten Riverdale or Melrose or the Lower East Side or forgotten Cobble Hill or Kensington or Bay Ridge or St. George or Maspeth or whatever it is, they are all here by neighborhood. And for those of you who want to get this book as a thank you gift in our drive, for those of you who call that pledge number, which I won't confuse you with right now, it is for a $100 contribution to WNYC on the phone or on our website. So, Kevin, just for fun, let's start at Times Square, where you have something called the Subway Doors to Nowhere. What's that?
Well, the New York Times, when they built the building above the Times Square station, the door goes to the Knickerbocker Hotel, which was just restored recently, is going to be condominiums. But the Knickerbocker Hotel was built around 1903, the same time that the subway was. And what happened was patrons from the Knickerbocker Hotel could enter right to the platforms of the train. In those days, this was before the you had to use a token to get on the train. You instead bought a ticket at the station. So you could simply walk onto the platform of a subway station right from a building. And that's what happened here. The New York Times also had a secret door to that station. And remnants of that door could also be seen on that platform.
With all the change around Times Square in recent years, is there a lot of forgotten New York around there?
Well, Times Square really has renewed itself dramatically in the last few years, and a lot of vestiges of old Times Square have sort of been eliminated. What got me, you know, in 1997, 1998, it really was an inspiration for the website. A building at the corner of 47th Street and Broadway was torn down, revealing a very, very old advertisement for J.A. Keel's Carriage Manufactory. Times Square used to be a... before entertainment moved uptown, used to be a center for the carriage trade and horse trading. And you found a lot of carriage makers around there. And J.A. Keel was one of those people. He had a store there on 1875, 1880. And it was miraculous when they tore that building down. You see this ad and all these neon signs and all the glitzy ads that were there. And all this ancient remnant of the past was right there in the middle.
In fact, here is a caller with something else in Times Square. Judy in Chelsea. Hi, Judy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I'm talking about the statues on 46th Street, just to the east of 7th Avenue. I call them the Ladies of 46th Street. They're on the old I. Miller shoe shop, the show folks shoe shop, dedicated to beauty in footwear. They're statuettes, really, and they're in niches in the building. When the building opened in 27, that is the shoe store, those niches were empty. And then they were filled with these statuettes after a contest was conducted asking people to vote for their favorite female stars in four different categories. And the reason why they belong to this segment is because they, frankly, haven't been taken such good care of, and they're very dark, and people... walk by them
and
never see them.
But I mean, they're still there. But they're still there.
They're still there. And
they're
you can
there.
See them if you're on the other side of the street and someone turns you around and points them out.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And that's kind of the case with a lot of things in Forgotten New York. Judy, thank you. Kevin, is that in the book?
Yes, that is in the book. I believe the statues are of Rosa Poncel, Marilyn Miller, Mary Pickford, and I believe one other woman. I don't have everything in front of me right now.
I even know the names. Mary Pickford.
I think the restaurant, there was a restaurant Fridays, and it's got all this red and striped garish sort of signage on the front. But if you go around to the side of the building, 46th Street and 7th Avenue, you can see these four leading ladies of Broadway. They're right there, and it's a remnant of old Times Square.
So let's change neighborhoods and continue How about right down here near the station in Tribeca, which you tell us used to be known as the Lower West Side? Now, I knew there was an Upper West Side, and I knew there was a Lower East Side, but I never knew there was such a thing as the Lower West Side.
Well, that was before the World Trade Center was built between 1970 and 1973. There used to be a produce market down in the area called Washington Market. And for many years after the World Trade Center was built, the streets above it, above VC Street, lay empty. And there were no buildings there at all, and there were empty lots, and there were old rusted lampposts left over from the previous century. And I've seen old photographs of this, and I was fascinated with it. That was another inspiration for me to do Forgotten New York.
Your very first listing in this neighborhood is something called The Strange Medallion of Harrison Street.
The West Side Highway, the Miller Highway, the elevated highway, was built around 1935, 1936 by Robert Moses and connected to the Henry Hudson Parkway above 72nd Street. It was built in the Art Deco era, so there were these highly stylized friezes above every cross street. The strange medallion above Harrison Street is, when they built Independence Plaza, that large housing project in the 70s, they saved a couple of the friezes from the West Side Highway, and they put one on the overpass above Harrison Street.
So, similarly, I noticed that you have the Hudson Street compass, an actual compass embedded in the sidewalk.
There is a compass embedded in the sidewalk, and if you weren't looking for it, you wouldn't notice it. It's just across from Duane Park, that little park where Duane Street splits in two in Tribeca. It's on Hudson Street. And it was probably placed there when the building was built. And I don't think anyone has cared for it or noticed it ever since. The true north is indicated by a letter N, and there's a compass dial. I found another one in downtown on the Wall Street area, but I haven't yet to photograph it. That one is sort of a metal inlay in the sidewalk.
Kevin Walsh, my guest on WNYC. His book is called Forgotten New York, The Ultimate Urban Explorer's Guide to All Five Boroughs. Let's talk to another of our urban explorers out there. How about John at Waterside Plaza? You're on WNYC. Hi, John.
Hi. So Waterside Plaza is four 40-story buildings in the East River between about 25th and 30th Street. And there used to be a pier. There's a plaque on the pier, and it's still here, you know, moved on to our project, that announces that during World War II, American Lend-Lease ships would go to England with supplies. They needed ballast to come back, so they came back with rubble from bombed-out Coventry, England, and dumped it in the East River right where I am. So Waterside Plaza, where I live, is built on top of Coventry, England.
Well, John, that's very interesting. I didn't know that, and I'm going to make a notation of that. Where is the plaque located?
If you come, there's a bridge crossing 25th Street. You go over that bridge, you walk up the ramp, and it's right in front of you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks. Good one. Nick in Harlem, you're on WNYC. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Brian. I live actually just above Harlem, between Harlem and Washington Heights, area called Hamilton Heights,
mm-hmm.
on 151st and Broadway. And on 150th and Riverside, there's a really wonderful statue. It's a flat iron square, and there's a cutout of a man silhouette. And it's for Ralph Ellison's book, Invisible Man.
Yes, we've been. I was by there on a forgotten tour.
And nobody notices it when they go by, right?
I pointed it out when I was on the tour, but it's one of those things that people don't – it's not in any of the books, and people don't notice it.
That was just a bad Invisible Man joke.
Right, exactly. But it's funny because he lived on 150th and Riverside his entire life and wrote his book there and tried to write his next book there, which was never finished, and died there.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that one, Nick. I noticed at one point in the book you deviate from the neighborhood's format for a few pages – that you devote entirely to lampposts. You're into lampposts?
I have been fascinated with lampposts ever since I was a child. In 1963, they changed the lampposts relatively overnight in my neighborhood. They went from the ornate cast iron styles that had been in place from around 1890 or so, and they switched over to more streamlined posts. They have eight-sided poles, or they have goosenecks, and those are the ones designed by Donald Deske, who also designed Radio City Music Hall. But I've had a fascination with lampposts ever since then.
And in fact, I gather you're not happy with the way street lighting has gone in New York.
Well, I would have liked to have seen the city preserve more of the old styles. They let them all rust and fall away, and now what they're doing is they're reproducing the old ones and putting them back up where they were. But if they had preserved the old ones, by all you have to do is give them a paint job, and they'll stay there. But I think the city could do better with preservation of old lampposts, certainly.
Another thing that I know you're into is signs, and Andy in Westchester has a sign for us. Hi, Andy.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
There's a little tiny sign that says The Corner on 24th, I think it's 24th Street and 6th Avenue. It's about two stories high, and it's on an angle on the actual corner of the building.
Yep.
And I know a little bit about it, having been originally put there by Costrin Bial's
Vaudeville.
But if you could tell me more, I'd be interested.
Well, that's pretty much what it is. They called it the corner. There's not only the sign on each corner of 6th Avenue and 24th Street, but if you look at the cornice of the building, at the very top of the building, it also says the corner there as well. It's one of the last vestiges of a vaudeville theater in New York City.
All right. Thanks for your call, Andy. We will continue with Kevin Walsh, author of the book Forgotten New York, The Ultimate Explorer's Guide to All 5 Boroughs. We will head next to the borough of Brooklyn, and there's so much stuff from history to rediscover there. And again, a reminder that Kevin Walsh's Forgotten New York is available as a thank you gift in our membership drive for those of you who pledge $100 or more. So stay with us for more Kevin Walsh, more of your Forgotten New York tips. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we continue now with Kevin Walsh, author of Forgotten New York, The Ultimate Urban Explorer's Guide to All 5 Boroughs. I'll just mention one time that this is available as one of our thank you gifts during this drive, if you're just joining us, for a $100 contribution to WNYC. Kevin, welcome back. And
right.
We'll get back to our callers in a minute, but I said we were going to go out to Brooklyn next, and let's start in a neighborhood that's changing fast and that has soaring property values, and that is Fort Greene. I see, for example, that it has an Olmsted and Vaux Park that I've not been to, and that is not Central Park.
Well, Olmsted and Vaux, that's way out in, I believe that's way out in Bath Beach.
Oh, maybe I misunderstood.
Yeah.
All right, give me something from Fort Greene.
Oh, well, there's the Soldiers and Sailors Monument, of course, in Fort Greene Park. There's the one of the things in Fort Greene that's that's in a lot of danger right now is Officers Row or Admirals Row. It's along Flushing Avenue, just east of Navy Street, and these are basically officers' houses from when the Navy Yard was active from the early part of the 20th century to the mid 60s. And basically what they've done is they've allowed these houses to deteriorate almost from the moment the officers moved out. Now they're in danger of being razed for a supermarket that they want to build there, and preservationists are trying to save them. Neighborhood representatives feel the supermarket would better serve the residents there. So there's a little bit of a dispute there about what's going to happen with the officers' row.
How about Forgotten Park Slope? That's been gentrified for so long now that it's hard to think of remnants of olden times. I guess that's what makes it forgotten. What you got in Park Slope?
Well, there's the Ansonia Watch Factory, Ansonia Clock Factory on 7th Avenue and 12th Street. It's a beautiful factory. It takes up most of the block. It's been converted to residential housing. There is the only known statue, in New York City at least, of Abraham Lincoln on horseback. And it's not a statue. It's more of a frieze or a bas-relief. It's underneath the arch in Grand Army Plaza. It's a very unique piece about Abe Lincoln. There's also a bust of Alexander Skene, who was a gynecologist, I believe, at Long Island University. You can see him at around the Grand Army Plaza, around the roadway that Plaza Street, the roadway that rings the exterior. It's the only bust of a gynecologist in New York City, probably. I would have to say.
the only statue, really, or a bust of a gynecologist. That's pretty interesting. Now, you say that New York, despite how much history is here, is a place more prone to destroying its historical infrastructure than many other cities like Philadelphia or others. Is that really true?
That's true. I mean, if you take a walk down Benefit Street in a place like Providence, Rhode Island, you will see dozens of houses that go back to the 1600s. Boston, there are whole streets go back to the 1700s. Same with Philly. Part of it in New York City is due to an accident. There was a tremendous fire in New York City in 1835, and it destroyed almost all the buildings from City Hall on south to the Battery. All the old Dutch houses that were there from the 1690s were eliminated. So as a result, in Manhattan, there are very few colonial-era houses. You will find some of them in my neighborhood, Flushing. There's the Quaker Meeting House, goes back to 1695, and Town Hall nearby goes back to the mid-1800s. And the John Bone House is one of the oldest houses in New York City in Flushing, goes back to 1661.
John Bone, right?
John Bone. I'm sorry, yeah. The pronunciation.
Yeah, I grew up near there. And they, when I was in elementary school, they would take us to that Friends Meeting House,
yes,
and the John Bone House, probably on the same trip, to show us some of historical Queens.
It's open to the public as a rule. The Quaker Meeting House, at least, it's open between 11 and 12, or is it 12 and 1? But if you go there in the late morning on Sunday, you'll probably get in. Sadly, the John Bone House is closed to the public and has been for several years because of a lack of funding to upkeep it.
Let's take some more forgotten New York tips from our listeners. Arthur in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Arthur.
Hi, Brian. Two things in Brooklyn that I grew up with that have become almost completely invisible. If you look for a marker or a monument or memorial or anything at the Ebbets Field development houses, explaining what was there before the houses were built, you can't find it. You have to look very, very hard to find a tiny plaque on the foundation stone for the apartment development saying that it was once the site of Ebbets Field. It's dated 1962. And the plaque is buried behind the bush on Bedford Avenue in McKeever Place.
And then to add insult to injury,
correct,
did you know that the Los Angeles Dodgers sued these guys who opened up a bar around there in Brooklyn called the
Brooklyn Dodger
a right. few years ago, even though they don't, there is no such thing as the Brooklyn Dodgers anymore. They
yep.
said it was a trademark infringement. So,
it's a different name now.
So the
restaurant's a different name. They had to change it.
They lost that lawsuit.
It's on 3rd yeah. Avenue just west of Bay Ridge Parkway, but we call it 75th yeah. Street in Brooklyn.
And is Arthur right about nothing much commemorating the old site of Ebbets Field?
Well, I would say that the Ebbets Field houses, there is a large sign that says they are Ebbets Field houses right on the buildings. The Polo Grounds uptown has a very small plaque in one of the buildings as well. But nearby the Polo Grounds, there's an even more of a forgotten artifact at Edgecombe Avenue, 155th Street. If you walk up Edgecombe a little bit, there's an old rusted staircase, and it might be a little dangerous to go down it actually. But if you're sure-footed, you could do it. And on the first landing there, it says, "This is the John T. Brush staircase presented by the New York Giants." John T. Brush, John Tomlinson Brush, was a owner of the Giants back in the early part of the 20th century. The staircase was probably something that people who were at the ballpark used to get back up to the street. In the old days, you could actually walk across the field and leave the field that way, and there were probably that staircase was probably out from center field at the old Polo Grounds. Yeah.
Arthur, thanks. Kevin in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. I'll give you an example of something that's forgotten. The old entranceway to the Brooklyn Navy Yard, which is across from the projects, it's the set from Fancy Free, where the sailors are dancing about uptown.
Is that on Navy Street and Sand Street?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really rotting. It's being used as a pound entrance for derelict cars that are seized. And the thing is rotting, and it's really, really a tragedy. It's in plays everywhere, reproduced in shows in high schools and colleges and on Broadway occasionally, and the City Ballet, and you have great Jerome Robbins choreographed around this thing, and it's rotting.
Nearby there is the old Commandant House.
And isn't that beautiful?
Beautiful, beautiful old building built in 1807. I had thought that Charles Bulfinch, the great Boston architect, had built a lot of that building, but I think recent research has shown that he didn't. But whether he did or not, it's a beautiful old building. I believe it's privately owned right now, and there's a high gate around it. Nobody can really see it. If you go up Little Street, which is higher, a little farther north in Vinegar Hill, you can catch a glimpse of it through the fence. But I wish they'd open it up for tours.
Kevin, thanks for your call. Hey, I want to pass something along. Kevin, it turns out that you're a hit with our listeners, and more to the point, you're a hit with our members, because we've already had 33 people call up and ask for your book as the thank you gift in our membership drive when they pledged $100 or more, and that's pretty good considering what a short period of time you've been on.
Well, thanks a lot, Brian.
And you know, we had not talked about this book until this hour. So since that's the case, I will just reinforce this for our listeners. For those of you who want to go poking around New York City in the way that John Walsh likes to do on his Kevin Walsh
it's
likes
Kevin
to
Walsh.
Do. I don't want to confuse you with the guy from America's Most Wanted.
He's got more money than me.
But you've got better walking tours.
Okay. And
so this book has, let's see, you tell me, how many total listings?
625.
Things in all five boroughs.
And I want to emphasize that unlike every other New York City guidebook, there are not 250 pages on Manhattan and 25 on the rest of New York City.
That's true.
Every borough is treated equally. We begin with the Bronx because it comes first alphabetically. Unfortunately, Staten Island still brings up the rear as it always seems to because it begins with S. But it's no less important than any of the other four.
And you don't have a photograph of all 600 of the items that you walk by here, but you have photographs of a lot of them.
We did. I actually have a photograph of every listing in the book, but in order for the book not to be 800 pages long, we had to cut some material, including the pictures.
So this is a New York City guidebook for New Yorkers.
Absolutely, and it also works for tourists, for out-of-town people who are curious about a New York City that the guidebooks will not show you.
So it's Forgotten New York, the ultimate urban explorer's guide to all five boroughs. It looks like total fun to take around to lots of neighbors. It's also done, as I said before, neighborhood by neighborhood. So if you're interested in the Forgotten Upper West Side or Forgotten Tribeca or Forgotten Melrose or Forgotten Cobble Hill or Forgotten Bay Ridge or Forgotten St. George or Forgotten Astoria or whatever I forgot, it's in there.
My friend Christina says that this is probably the only time Maspeth has ever been mentioned outside of Maspeth.
That's right. I have relatives in Maspeth, so I mentioned Maspeth sometimes.
You did earlier. You did.
I did make a point of including that. So anyway, this book is available as a thank you gift in our membership drive if you pledge $100 or more at 1-888-376-WNYC, 1-888-376-9692. And a lot of our true New Yorkers in the audience seem to want to do that. Of course, you can also get it and contribute on our website, which is WNYC.org. You go into some of the classic whoppers of things that you can't even believe were really destroyed. And maybe the most notable of all is the old Penn Station.
The old Penn Station. However, if you look closely, if you look around, if you root around down there, you can still see remnants of the old Penn Station. There were huge 22 huge stone eagles above the entrance. Two of them are still at in front of Penn Station. There are still one of the indicator clocks that signs that indicated what track your train would be on. You need permission. You need to do this on one of the tours that they give. I believe they give it one Monday a month. But ask to go back into the baggage area, and if you go further back in the baggage area, you will see this thing. And it's apparently it was not removed when the rest of Penn Station was torn down. It's a beautiful little ornate track indicator. Also, some of the brass railings from Old Penn. When you go downstairs to get on the platform, those are still there. So there are a couple of remnants here and there from the Old Penn.
And in the same breath in the book, you also mentioned the old Metropolitan Opera House.
Right, that was on Broadway and 39th Street. It's just one of those things you couldn't believe would be torn down and would not be torn down today with the Landmarks Preservation Commission.
By the way, we do have one correction that a number of people have called in with.
No, there are a couple of things wrong in the book. We got to fix that in the next edition.
Well, not a correction of something in the book, but a correction of something that you said that I think actually contradicts what's in the book. I'm going to look it up. And,
all right.
And people said, well, actually, Fort Greene Park...
I may have misspoke.
...is an Olmsted and Vaugh Park.
It could be, but I hadn't heard that. So,
so I don't know. We'll try to nail that down.
Right.
But it's pretty interesting. Let's see. Among the other things destroyed, you even include Freedom Land, an old theme park where Co-op City is now.
I did a book signing at Co-op City at a Barnes and Noble where the old Freedom Land was, and you know, it was a swamp earlier, and then it became Freedom Land, and now it's Co-op City. So I don't know if you could really say that everything's an improvement. But
Shelley in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC.
Yes. Good morning, Brian. Good morning, Mr. Walsh.
Hi, Shelley.
Hi. How are you? I live half a block away from Broken Angel. Is that a building
that is very much endangered right now?
Yeah. The city is on the verge of destroying it. They've given Arthur Wood, the owner, 3 weeks to bring it up to code. And, you know, it's very well loved, not only here, but in a lot of different parts of the world. In fact, there's a German documentary going on right now about the building, and they were there when the cops basically stormed Broken Angel and took Arthur away in handcuffs. They've got him on track for demolition, and everybody in the neighborhood is of the opinion that the fire that happened 2 weeks ago was somehow set.
Huh, interesting. By those who want to see the demolition go forward and the development go forward, I guess. Are you familiar with this?
Well, I know about the story, but I don't know if it was the fire was deliberately set or not. I know it's a shame that this thing has happened, and we hope that enough money can be raised so that Broken Angel can remain where it is. But it seems to be very much in doubt right now, unfortunately.
Oliver, calling about Staten Island. You're on WNYC. Hi, Oliver.
Hey, Brian. How you doing?
All right.
Mr. Walsh. Great
Hello.
Book, great website. I'm a great explorer of the city myself, and a couple years ago I dragged my family kicking and screaming to southern Staten Island to check out a graveyard that's mentioned in up in the old hotel, the Joseph Mitchell book. But in our sojourn around southern Staten Island that
Right,
day,
it's on Crabtree Avenue, I believe.
Yeah, there's also a colonial graveyard over by the Arthur Kill, and from there you can see, to keep the graveyard theme going, this wonderful collection of old ferry boats and tugboats that are half submerged and kind of wilting away into nothingness over the course of the day.
These are old tugboats and old ships that are being allowed to rust and sink into the Arthur Kill. Among them, I believe, is one of the ships that attempted to go to the rescue of the Slocum when the Slocum burned and sank in 1904.
One of the great fires.
Yeah.
And tragedies. Pre-9/11, talk about a death toll.
Over 1,000.
That's right.
Yeah.
One of the biggest ones in New York history. Oliver, thank you for that. You know, and he says graveyard. That was a maritime graveyard, but you have cemeteries in this book where human beings are buried, and it's amazing that with the value of real estate, we have any cemetery land left in the city, but there are some great ones, aren't there?
Well, on that theme, after 1855, no cemeteries by law could be constructed in New York. So as a result, they built huge ones in Western and Central Queens. One of the more fascinating things I did with Forgotten New York, I went into Mount Zion Cemetery, which is a Jewish cemetery, and apparently one of the traditions was to put a picture of the interred right on the tombstone, and we have dozens of these on the website, and it is mentioned in the book, and I think this practice is sort of coming back right now.
One of them, by the way, where I am very proud to have some family, is Cypress Hills National Cemetery, a full-fledged national cemetery with the same official status as Arlington,
yes.
For example.
There are very few of these cemeteries in the United States, and we're proud in New York City to have one of them.
Which I'm surprised doesn't get more notice because of the status in our, at least, historical national life.
Yeah.
Here is a an email before we run out of time from a listener who says, couple of reminders for your guest, Mr. Walsh. The fourth statue on the former I. Miller store is Ethel Barrymore.
Yes, yes. It was a momentary slip of the mind there. I forgot what it was.
In Times Square. There's another. Oh, and you said you referred to this one statue and you said it's the only known bust of a gynecologist.
Bust. There's a statue on Upper Fifth
Avenue.
Oh, now
we're distinguishing between busts and statues.
Well,
go ahead.
You have to. I forget the guy's name now, but there is a
she's got it here.
Yeah.
It's Dr. Marion Sims.
That's it, yeah.
Fifth Avenue and 103rd Street, a founder of Women's Hospital.
But you know what? There's only two gynecologists who have statues or busts in New York City, and that's not a whole lot.
Maybe that's where we leave it. What do you say? Forgotten New York is the book. Let's see. Do the subtitle for me.
I call it The Infrastructure of a Lost Metropolis on my website, but they made me call it something different in the book. I forget what they put in the cover.
The Ultimate Urban Explorer's
right.
Guide to All Five Boroughs.
I'd also like to plug my website, by the way, www.forgotten-ny.com. And you know what? Your boss might fire you, because if you're at work, you'll be there all day long.
And I'll plug your publisher, which is Collins. This has been really fun. Again, we remind our listeners that the Forgotten New York book is available as a thank you gift in our membership drive. If you contribute $100 or more to WNYC, thank you for considering it. And Kevin, this has been a great joy. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much, Brian.
Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.